BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
I was not the only fosterling in Peleus's halls. The modest king turned out to be rich in cast-off sons. My bed was a pallet in a long barrack-style room filled with other boys tussling and lounging. For meals, we sat at tables scratched from years of clattering plates. They trained us with sword and spear. This was the price of Peleus's kindness. One day we would make him a fine army. At night, I dreamed of the dead boy, his head cracked open like an egg. Across the dining hall, I caught the flash of bright hair in lamplight. Achilles sat with a group of boys who crowded him like dogs in their eagerness, mouths lolling. That is what a prince should be. In the fourth week, the boys learned at last of the reason for my exile. Their whispers choked me, turned the food in my mouth to ash. My narrow world narrowed further. "I heard you were here," a clear voice, like ice-melted streams. "Achilles." I was in a storeroom, my knees against my chest. "I've been looking for you," he said, his face serious. "I've come to see if you're ill." "No," I answered, dully. Then something shifted in his face, a decision. "Come," he said, "to my lyre lesson." We walked in silence through winding halls and came to a small room. Achilles opened a chest. He pulled a lyre from it, plucked a string. The note was warm and resonant, sweetly pure. I swallowed, my throat dry. "It is beautiful." Achilles returned to his strings, and the music rose again. It was like no music I'd ever heard before. It had warmth as fire does. When at last he ceased, it took me a long moment before I came back to myself. "Patroclus," Achilles rang each syllable. "Tonight you're to sleep in my room," he said. I was so shocked that my mouth would have hung open. "All right," I said. "A servant will bring your things." I could imagine the thoughts of the other boys. Why him? He had bestowed the long-awaited honor upon the most unlikely of us, small and ungrateful and probably cursed. Slowly, though, I grew used to it. After dinner, my feet took me to his room out of habit, and I thought of the pallet where I lay as mine. After a time, I found I could sleep again. The dreams lessened and dropped away. He began to tell me the stories of his day before we drifted off to sleep. After a time, my tongue loosened. I began to tell my own stories. "I'm glad your father sent you," he said. I stopped watching for ridicule, the scorpion's tail hidden in his words. He said what he meant. Our friendship came at once after that, like spring floods from the mountains. One day we might go swimming, another we might climb trees. I did not mind any more that I lost when we raced and I lost when we swam out to the rocks. It was enough to watch him win, to see the soles of his feet flashing as they kicked up sand, or the rise and fall of his shoulders as he pulled through the salt. It was enough. The only place I did not follow was to see his mother. He went late at night or at dawn and returned flushed and smelling of the sea. One morning of my second spring, he came back from his visit with his mother later than usual. "Is she well?"
"She is well. She wants to meet you." "Do you think I should?"
I knew her reputation for hating mortals. He did not meet my eyes. "There's no harm in it. Tomorrow night," she said. I understood now that it was a command. The gods did not make requests. The next night, when the household slept, I climbed out of our window. The moon was half full, bright enough for me to pick my way over the rocks without a torch. A breeze blew down the beach, and grateful I closed my eyes to it. When I opened them again, she was standing before me. She was taller than I was, taller than any woman I'd ever seen. Her black hair was loose down her back, and her skin shone luminous and impossibly pale, as if it drank light from the moon.
"You are Patroclus."
I flinched at the sound of her voice, hoarse and rasping. I had expected chimes, not the grinding of rocks in the surf. "Yes, lady." Distaste ran over her face.
"He will be a god," she said. "Do you understand?"
I could feel her breath on my cheek, not warm at all, but chilled like the depths of the sea.
"Yes."
She leaned closer, looming over me.
"Good."
Carelessly, as if to herself, she added,
"You will be dead soon enough."
She turned and dived into the sea, leaving no ripples behind her.
"You will be dead soon enough."
She had said it coldly as a fact, and she wished him to be a god, a god. Her desire was ambitious. It was a difficult thing to make even a half-god immortal.
"What are you thinking about?"
It was Achilles come to find me. I'd half expected him to come. I'd wanted him to.
"Nothing," I said.
It was untrue. I guess it always is. He sat down beside me, his feet bare and dusty.
"Did she tell you that you would die soon?"
I turned to look at him.
"Yes," I said.
"I'm sorry," he said. The wind blew the grey leaves above us.
"She wants you to be a god," I told him.
"I know." His face twisted with embarrassment, and in spite of itself, my heart lightened. It was such a boyish response, and so human. But the question still waited to be asked.
"Do you want to be?" I paused, struggling. "Do you want to be a god?"
His eyes were dark in the half-light.
"I don't know," he said at last. "I don't know what it means, or how it happens." He looked down at his hands, clasping his knees.
"I don't want to leave here. When would it happen anyway?"
"Soon."
I knew nothing of how gods were made.
"And is there really a place like that? Olympus? She doesn't even know how she'll do it. She thinks that if I become famous enough..."
He trailed off. "Then the gods will take you voluntarily." He nodded, but he'd not answered my question.
"Achilles."
He turned to me, his eyes filled with a sort of angry bewilderment. He was barely 12.
"Do you want to be a god?"
"Not yet," he said. A tightness I had not known was there, eased a little. I would not lose him yet. He cupped a hand against his chin. His features looked finer than usual, like carved marble. "I'd like to be a hero, though. I think I could do it. If the prophecy is true. If there's a war. My mother says I am better even than Heracles was." I did not know if it was motherly bias or fact. I did not care.
"Not yet."
He was silent a moment. I stood, put down a hand for him. He took it, pulled himself up.
"There were figs in the kitchen. I saw them," he said.
"We were only 12, too young to brood. I bet I can eat more than you. Race you." We ran. The next summer we turned 13. Our bodies began to stretch, pulling at our joints. The other boys, too, were growing older. Regularly we heard moans behind closed doors. It would have been easy, infinitely easy, for Achilles or I to have bedded one of the serving girls ourselves. Once I even heard Peleus offer the prettiest girl to his son. He answered, almost diffidently, "I'm tired tonight." Later, as we walked back to our room, he avoided my eyes. On one of the first fine days, we're on the beach after lunch, our backs to a sloping piece of driftwood. Beside me, Achilles shifts, and his foot falls open against mine. He turns and finds me looking at him. "What?" he says. "Nothing." I can smell him, the oils that he uses on his feet, pomegranate and sandalwood, the salt of clean sweat. He puts a hand down to lean against. The muscles in his arms curve softly, appearing and disappearing as he moves. His eyes are deep green on mine. My pulse jumps for no reason I can name. He has looked at me 1,000,000 times, but there is something different in this gaze, an intensity I do not know. He watches me. It seems that he is waiting. I shift an infinitesimal movement towards him. It is like the leap from a waterfall. I do not know until then what I am going to do. I lean forward and our lips land clumsily on each other. They are like the fat bodies of bees, soft and round and giddy with pollen. I can taste his mouth, hot and sweet with honey from dessert. My stomach trembles, and a warm drop of pleasure spreads beneath my skin. More. The strength of my desire, the speed with which it flowers, shocks me. I flinch and startle back from him. His eyes are wide with surprise. What have I done? He stands and steps backwards. His face has closed over, impenetrable and distant, freezing the explanations in my mouth. He turns and races, the fastest boy in the world, up the beach and away. My side is cold with his absence. Dear gods, I think, let him not hate me. I should have known better than to call upon the gods. When I turned the corner onto the garden path, Thetis was there. Her fingers, chill and unearthly pale, reached for me. My feet knocked against each other as she lifted me from the earth. "I have seen," she hissed, the sound of waves breaking on stone. I could not speak. She held me by the throat. "He is leaving." Her eyes were black now, dark as sea-wet rocks and as jagged. "I should have sent him long ago. Do not try to follow." She opened her hand and released me, boneless, to the ground.